So what if you stayed in the rat race, but you decided to win the race? Today, we're talking with somebody who has done exactly that, who has achieved executive level status at the company he works for. We're talking to Yamin Glucco today. We're so psyched. Let's get into it. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Montreal's Elite Unleashed. I'm your host, Logan Boyce. With me, as always, is Jonathan Ehrlich. Today, we're super psyched to have with us Yamin Glucco, somebody who has won the rat race, who decided not to just play and work the 9-to-5, but to win the 9-to-5. So thanks so much for coming on and chatting with us today, buddy.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm not sure if I have won yet. I don't feel like the journey's ever over, to be honest with you. And that might be one of
so
my challenges.
So before we get into your journey, what is winning? Because I think that's an important question to ask anybody. What would be your definition of win?
So this is a very existential question, which I love, obviously. No, I guess I don't think you ever win, right? I don't know, like, is there ever like an end point? I guess, do you believe in retirement?
Personally, no.
But. Yeah, same with me. So, I mean, I was in Japan last year, and as two of you know very well, I'm very fond of Japanese culture, and I'm going back at the end of this year, and they have this belief called ikigai, and it's this overall kind of like reason for living and what your purpose is in life. And right. One of the, and there's a bunch of values, and I won't, you know, pontificate on that, but one of the things there is you basically never retire. So their core belief system is you focus very hard on something, you're passionate, and whatever passion means we can talk about, it's a whole nebulous term, but you care very deeply about something and you do that basically forever. Because as soon as you stop doing that, that's when you stop living. And that's also why they live the longest if you look at the statistics and so on, even though they have a negative birth rate.
Wow. It's crazy.
So wait, sorry. In Japan, they actually have, they don't have retirement. Like they just keep working forever, basically.
I mean, this is a, like, so I'm not going to like say that I'm an expert on this, right? So let's just take my word for it.
From your knowledge and your experience.
Your own research.
This is not financial advice.
No, it's certainly not financial advice. No, in all seriousness, yeah. Like, so there isn't this culture of retirement. Like you have a very deep corporate culture there. Some would talk about, you know, what's involved there and how that can be problematic. In there, you do have this concept of retirement, but they don't personally believe. If you ask them, like, hey, you know, here, for example, in the Western world, we have this concept of financial independence and retire early or fire if you go on Reddit with everyone else. They don't believe in that sort of thing. If you ask, and I would encourage you to ask anyone, if any of you have ever been to Japan or go to Japan, ask someone that question, you'll see what kind of response you get. You know, and beyond that, there's also this whole mechanism the government has where they'll have somewhat inefficiencies when it comes to hiring certain governmental workers who are past a certain age just to keep the population employed because it's so core to their beliefs.
Wow.
And purpose.
That's crazy. So speaking of journeys and corporate structures, I mean, nobody ascends to executive status like you have without having a little bit of a backstory. So why don't we get into that a little bit? How did you attain the status that you now have?
Sure. Perhaps I can do an intro because we're just getting a little nebulous with what I do. So I'm a tech executive leader, publicly traded tech company, have worked in the industry for a while. I'm basically middle-aged, but maybe look a little younger, I hope, is what people tell me.
I think you and everyone else's definitions of middle-aged are different,
but I was
okay.
Gonna say,
you know,
I don't, like, man, are we that close to middle-aged?
No, jeez. Let's say no.
No.
All I'll say is I have a lot of white hair at this point.
And, we're a third-aged man. We're not a middle-aged.
Yeah, I would concur with that.
I'm not sure I want to live that long, but ask me, you know, if I retire and ask me
if
afterwards.
You keep living in Japan.
I mean, that is a discussion topic for another time. In general, I've always been kind of an autodidact. Really like to teach myself a lot of things. Mm. Back in my younger days, playing StarCraft, in my teenage years, in addition to, you know, being an internet nerd in general, not an internet troll, but an internet nerd, got very big into software development, building my own websites, kind of doing that sort of thing. Just wanted to always learn more about what was going on and, you know, like essentially the psychology of behavior. Like why was I seeing certain things? Why did I feel compelled to take certain actions? And so, yeah, basically taught myself a bunch of that fun stuff when I was younger. As I graduated university, I studied in business and Mandarin Chinese at the time. So obviously it was a focus on a couple different languages, trying to open my opportunities up in multiple markets. I then was like, all right, well, I'm going to go into this corporate world and see what this looks like, you know, but before I do that, maybe I got a couple gigs doing consulting. So I do like digital marketing, you know, I'd help people out when it comes to like auditing code on their website or building websites for them, helping them promote their businesses, built up a little bit of that for a short while. It's going very well. And then decided, you know what, this is, maybe I'm not mature enough to handle this. I don't have the maturity to be motivated and maintain this because it was going so well. I really couldn't sustain it. I was more focused on the, you know, pleasurable side of that, let's say, as opposed to the responsibility and scalable growth side of that.
Yeah. Sounds like you weren't middle-aged.
No, at that time I wasn't. At that time, I certainly wasn't. And my mindset, neither was my mindset. But thereafter, I started working for a company. I'd say it was a more like mid-stage company in Montreal here, effectively, in the travel industry. It was tech focused. So I worked in data and analytics was my focus and kind of my background. Again, I use the term nerd liberally and in a fun and positive way, not as a pejorative, but something I always cared about. So that was a need they had. It was like, hey, you know, I'll do that. From there, I basically was hired to work and just had a manager title, but I wasn't managing anyone. So I was like, okay, cool. They were like, hey, we don't know how like Google Analytics works and like how to look at our data. I was like, well, I can do that.
Yeah. You
know, seemed to have convinced them anyway. So go with me on that. Started there. After about 3 months, they were like, hey, you're doing a really good job. You seem to know what you're talking about. Hey, we got someone here who seems pretty sharp. You know, do you want to have them on your team? And you guys build up a kind of department. I was like, absolutely. So ran with that. From there, built up a bit more of a team, started taking on more and more responsibility. So expanding the scope of what I was doing beyond mm-hmm. just data. And let me know if I'm
that going. That sector was exploding at that time too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Data became so much more important and all that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll say the name of the company and where it led to afterwards, essentially. This is, I guess, the payoff of this story is essentially like expanded my scope, got a bunch of different responsibilities, had a pretty good sized team, had a strong, like, you know, I had a senior manager title, things were going well. We got acquired by a company you may have heard of called Airbnb. And you know, that was cool. Given that my team focused on the kind of more technical side, so data, that sort of stuff, we had a big need there. So I had an offer and opportunity to go work in San Francisco. So I had a team there, would fly very frequently, and had an offer to go and work there permanently. But at the time, wasn't really convinced about leaving Montreal because I'm very close to, well, at times very close to my mother and my grandmother, who's no longer with us. And so kind of chose to be like, hey, you know what? Kind of mama's boy. Can't really leave my mom here alone. Now I'm open to that. She can deal with it. But at the time, wasn't ready to take that step. You know, wasn't.
That's that middle-aged speak.
And man, let me tell you.
I'll look after her. Don't worry about it.
Appreciate you. So didn't do that. But what happened thereafter was my VP at the time, you know, we had a really good relationship. Her background was in marketing. You know, she's been an executive for a lot of public, like very well-known companies, say in North America. I won't name some of them, but you would definitely know them. And she was at another company, which is, again, publicly traded. And she said to me, hey, look, this is a company that deals with a lot of retail store footprints. It has a huge, huge presence mm-hmm. in North America, like massive, 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 250 stores at the time. And I was like, hey, we're doing this, but don't really know how to do anything like on the online side. And there's like a lot of logistics and details involved in this. She's like, so come over here. I'm going to promote you to director. You run this. Okay, you like have your P&L, profit and loss. So you basically mm-hmm. you have your budget, you manage everything. You got a big team at 15 people. She's like, you figure it out, you roll with it, let's do it. And the CEO at the time was the former CEO of Indigo, which is a bookstore, yep. well, book and home goods store here in Canada, in North America, but here in Canada. And so, yeah, she was like, come do this. I was like, all right, she gave me the keys. So it was a big jump. I was comfortable, I was secure. I got paid decently at the time anyway. But I was ambitious and I wanted to make the next step. So went there, did that. And what that involved was, I mean, everything from like data warehousing, so how your data is organized, to fulfillment and logistics, which is very complicated when you have an actual like CPG or consumer packaged good. You know, you're actually shipping a physical good to people.
Yeah.
And how that works in the US and Canada and distribution networks is very complex. And how that all ties into systems is a whole separate topic, which probably not for this audience. And then suffice to say, beyond that, it's also digital marketing, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. So long story short, build this up, you know, the company is where it's at now. There's a lot of drama and turmoil there. Went through a lot.
Turbulence.
Again, yes, most certainly. But lived through it and built it up now where the majority of their business, you know, the split before was like 100-0 and then like 90-10. When I left, which is a couple of years now, quite a few years now, it was 80-20 the other way. And this all happened before COVID. So I stood by my statement of working online as opposed to focusing on the physical at the time. You know, I think that's making a comeback now, but separate topic. So long story short, do that. From there, built a bit of a network, know people, you know, have then like, it was like, okay, cool. Had opportunities to consult, work with different startups, you know, seed fund, Series A, Series B, you know, most of them pre-IPO. And I lived through the Airbnb IPO as well. So that was an interesting situation. And then, yeah, from there, had a former colleague of mine reached out to me, said, hey, come work at this other company. It's about to IPO. Great opportunity. I wasn't really interested at the time. I was doing well, but her and I had a really great relationship. You know, she was always the kind of creative side, and that's not so much like design creativity. It's not really my.
And this is where you're landing on your current place, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Which I've been there for about 5 years or so now.
Nice.
So she pushed me. I trusted her. I said, okay, cool. Went there, had a great conversation with a bunch of different people, did it. And yeah, from there, essentially, you know, I've talked enough at this point about the journey and myself, which is probably slightly grotesque. So let's just say that, you know, started there and functioned more on the operation side. So again, you've got a mixture of data, you've got a mixture of like how the systems work together. I kind of, you know, started building a pattern there and recognizing something I was good at, but that there's also a need for. And essentially, in a very short period of time, just started expanding my scope. So assume I was doing something well, or they wanted to work on me, debatable, you know? And yeah, that's expanded from then. When I started, I had 10 employees, maybe 11, and I have 140 now.
Holy. Wow. Yeah. So you said a big team was 15 and I have 140.
Yeah.
You got an insanely huge team.
Yeah.
For the layman.
Yes.
You said a lot of things there. At one point you said 80-20, you said 90-10.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, those are numbers.
Pardon me.
But, but I don't, I want to understand what it is you do, because a certain amount of it sounded like kind of like what Shopify is today, where it's like building a website and having all of the analytics and everything kind of built in there. Obviously, that didn't exist before. So it sounds like you kind of helped curate and build something like that while also understanding the analytics and how to figure out to use that analytics to target people better and to convert better. So what is it that you would say, if you were to say like in the most simple terms, kind of like that, what you do and what your people on your team do?
So I'd say this, the simplest way to break down how tech companies, the tech industry works is you have a product. So it's something you sell. It tends to be a software, you know, in tech, that's kind of the idea, but sometimes you can have a physical component part as well. From there you have something, you know, go to market. So that's like your sales or, you know, kind of what drives your revenue. And that sort of behavior gets you to that. And then that includes marketing as well. And thereafter, you have operations. And that enables, it's kind of a ladder, right? If you think of it that way. So you've got your operations, which enables your go-to-market, which supports your product. That's kind of the way that, you know, it's a funnel in a sense works. And so I lead the operations function, which is more about enabling people to accelerate growth or achieve any kind of growth or functionality. So the product is what you're selling, right? Go-to-market is what drives that. And then how that actually happened. So things, example, in many businesses, you'll have to log your customers, much like in your industry, right? So you'll have a CRM or, you know, like where, how you manage a database, how you understand how people behave and then take actions and like inform yourself to take more targeted actions, spend your money more efficiently. All things of that nature, as you alluded to, are the things that my teams would do and what my background is in.
Okay.
Awesome.
So yeah, it is all encompassing and you do need 140 people when you get to scale.
I mean, some people might argue that, but in all seriousness, it's like, it depends, like the whole idea of what systems and now in the industry and what you're seeing right in the market is everyone's talking about AI, you know, you can argue if that's a bubble or not. I can talk a lot about that since I work in that and I've been doing that for many years. But I would say that the idea here is there's only two ways to scale up a business, right? You either throw more bodies at the problem, so you have more people, and that drives more revenue or solves more problems if you have customer support, things of that nature. Alternatively, the benefit of systems and AI, right, is that you'll get economies of scale. So instead of having more people, you can have a system do it. You can automate, you can do things of this nature. So yeah, there's a need for sure. I mean, I believe there's a need for me. I hope so. Otherwise, I won't have a job for much longer.
Well, I remember discussing with you one time that you were, and I won't say which company this was for, but you were very upset that they were so hooked on the need for more humans to do all of this stuff that you knew that you could create processes and automations to eliminate, let's say, use the 80-20 principle, 80% of that work could have been automated. So that I think that just stands to reason that you were able to flip that previous company from 0% online sales to 80% of their sales become online. I think that's absolutely insane. During your journey, who were some of the people that helped you out?
Yeah. So as I said, I had my former VP at the time. Like I started as a manager and she was a VP there and she, you know, took a trust in me and, you know, we still have a great relationship to this day. This is over a decade ago. We're still in contact. We had drinks last week.
That's awesome.
You know? Yeah. So she's still involved actively advising me in my career and, you know, my life as an executive because she's been doing it for a lot longer than I have. So yeah, she put a lot of trust in me and we were able to build that and maintain that relationship over the years.
Isn't that crazy that this person, obviously, that they're not financially incentivized to help you whatsoever.
At the time she was probably.
Well, yeah. Originally when she was working for the same company that you were, but I imagine now there's no financial incentivization for her to continue to help you. She just, you know, likes to send the elevator down.
Yeah. I think I give her all the credit in the world and obviously she knows I respect her and I'm very fond of her obviously. And so maybe I'll give her a shout out if I post a clip of this on my LinkedIn or something. but beyond that, I think like y'all work in sales and things of this nature, right? And so in general, what's the easiest way to negotiate with someone? Well, it's when it's a win-win. If you don't have that, well, there's a lot of convincing that has to happen there. Mm-hmm. How to win friends and influence people. So certainly there's something in it for everyone. Very few things are done altruistically in my estimation, right? So maybe she gets something seeing my success and knowing she plays a part in it, I hope is rewarding to her. And if she doesn't feel that way, well, I've told her as much and I've told her how much I appreciate her. And I definitely picked up the tab. So that
good man, helps. Good man.
Not that she needs it, but you know, still a thing that's just out of respect for her there. So yeah. And I mean, if we move on to topping later on about, you know, philosophy for leadership and things of that nature, it's the same value I get from leading a team and my people and what I care about.
Your tabs are usually very high too. So picking up that tab, for those who don't know, that's a big deal.
There's certainly a joke.
There's probably some yes. very old red wine or some very rare bourbon on that tab.
I will not comment on this.
One anecdote that I'll throw out, and one thing that has stuck with me that you said over time, because in what you do, I remember there was this company that you were working with, and you had walked in and there was a campaign that they had running. Mm. And they said they were going to just let the campaign finish running and then they would start the new campaign. And when you walked in, you had seen this and you said, why would we continue wasting this money? So you were able to save them that money out of the gate just from your experience with the analytics and with the data. Sure. So from living inside of the data the way that you have, it feels like you kind of have a different skill set that you don't learn that in school. You learn that from the experience of dealing with it. Would you say that that's accurate? And would you say that you understand it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, so in general, as a self-professed nerd, I care about, I mean, I'm very interested in statistics in general. And one of the things you see is that if you know, there's books on this and Nassim Taleb is an author who wrote, you know, extensively about this. One of the things he talks about is that if you look at a lot of the advancements we've had in life, and you'll probably see it in your personal life, and technology companies are very much like this, it's not theory that drives innovation or success, it's practice. So you start doing something, and it's kind of Atomic Habits, all these books I'm sure you're all very familiar with. Yeah. These things of that nature, you start doing something, you iterate, and that's how you succeed. If you try to over-engineer something, it's not gonna work. Now, on what you said, something that's interesting, and perhaps your audience might be interested in this thing. One of my biggest learnings I realized is when I was younger, for the middle age or alleged middle age, I would kind of come in like a house on fire, like, this makes no sense. And I just be like, here's some logic. 2 + 2, 4. Why would you do this? And though I may have been objectively correct, that's not how you speak to people. If you want them to, you know, go along with
what do you mean? You can't just shout at them and they fix things?
I mean, I wasn't shouting. I think I said it in a slightly more eloquent manner.
Busting down the doors.
No, what are you guys doing? That's not my way. No, certainly there was a slide deck in certain level, you know.
Certainly at least a slide deck.
At least a slide deck after the door fell. But in all seriousness, that's one of my biggest learnings actually. It was one of, like, you know, look at failures. It was like, wait. And I remember I asked this to different leaders I've had, because I've had many mentors over the year. It's like, I don't understand. This is objectively correct. You get it. Why doesn't this person get it?
Yeah.
Right. And I wasn't thinking critically about, it's not just, you know, if you have the right information, because that isn't always that hard to get. Yeah. It's, can you get people to understand what is in it for them? How, like, this information is going to benefit them? Getting people to, I say, comprehend or digest something that, you know, to your point, you talked about certain terminologies. You know, I make the joke frequently that there's a lot of TLAs in the industry, 3-letter acronyms.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, a lot of jargon, essentially. And that's the challenge, right? Is getting people to, in their own way, whatever their personality type be, understand where you're coming from. If you were, like, I work in a pretty technical field, obviously. So that's hard to articulate to people, but that's maybe the superpower you need.
But that's also the difference between the leader and the worker, right? Like, you might be really good at doing the job, mm-hmm. and that's where you come in and be like, I don't understand why people can't see this, versus having to become the leader to be able to say, I need people to see this. How can I get them to see it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll also be, like, respectful to, you know, people I worked with and so on. I wouldn't want to have this, like, leader worker situation. I think there's an execution level on everyone. Right. And I try to, like, run my teams as much so by showing everyone that level of thing, like, hey, there's a level for development for everyone. And I'm not just paying lip service to that. I genuinely mean that. But yeah, I think in the case I'm referring to here, I was a leader and I was failing at that role, because part of being, when you have this accountability and this responsibility for running a team, even if you don't, for just for yourself and your role you're doing, you know, it's your job for people to understand your value. So there's this concept, you know, just quickly here that I talk a lot to people about, is managing upwards and managing downwards, concept you're familiar with, right? So if you're in a leadership role, you have people reporting to you directly, right? Well, you're managing downwards because they report to you. Managing upwards is you'll usually report to someone as well, an executive, unless you're on the C-level, right? And then you report to the board. So at that point, you're managing upwards. And the level of communication is very different there. So no matter where you are, and if there's a hierarchy or no hierarchy, whatever you're doing, you have a responsibility to someone. And in the example you're referring to, let's say you're starting somewhere, you have responsibility yourself as well. And so that's a long-winded way of saying, yeah, you probably want to communicate like what value you're delivering and what you're doing, even for yourself. Because if you understand that, most people are intrinsically motivated, like they need intrinsic motivation of some form, which we can talk about. And understanding how you're having an impact in what you're doing in your day-to-day or week-to-week is really going to help you be able to succeed. And that's something I see with my team.
It's so funny that you're saying that, because for entrepreneurs, that's a huge part of the entrepreneur thing, is you need to stay motivated. You need to keep learning. You need to, you know, stay excited about what you're doing. And then as you grow, you need to motivate the people that you're working with and kind of keep building from there. From the corporate side of things, it's interesting to have the you know, managing downwards and managing upwards, and obviously like trying to find a way to lightly be able to say managing downwards without it sounding patronizing or
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like it's a term in the industry, so it isn't something that's meant to be, you know, like reductive to anyone. But yeah, you know, like I'll be honest to your audience here, if they're primarily entrepreneurs or, you know, looking to be entrepreneurs, it's something I was never really that great at. You know, I'm lucky to have friends such as yourselves who have been very successful at that. And I have a lot of respect for you because of that. I'm a very motivated person. I'm, you know, as you know, mm-hmm. and as people will say, if you ask anyone, so I work very hard and I take that very seriously given my background and what I've grown up in. But, you know, doing it on my own, I had success, but I think the hardest thing in anything, and you see that in sports and in life, is sustained success, mm-hmm. right? So I was able to burn the candle pretty hot pretty quickly, but the wick, I suppose,
I say that all the time. I say people can be great for a week. Anybody can be great for a week. Anybody can be great for a month.
Absolutely.
But like, can you be great for a full year? Can you be great for 5 years? It's tough, man. It's tough to keep it like that.
Absolutely.
Well, that leads us to the next thing too, which is, how do you find people like that? How do you find the talent? What are the indicators that you're looking for to be able to choose the, you know, that TLA, the KPI that you're looking for to find the right people to add into the companies that you're working with?
So you're saying like in the kind of environment I've been, how do I go about hiring?
Yeah, like what would be like, what would be something that someone says, you're like, oh, sweet, this guy's going to be great, or this gal's going to be great, versus something that somebody says, we're like, whoa, red flag.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like, I don't want to be, you know, grotesque about any of it. I think if people are asking more about benefits and what's in it for them, as opposed to like the achievement and what you're trying to do and develop, that's probably a bad sign. You know, like compensation, remuneration, this is obviously important to all of us, everyone in the room included here. But when you're doing an interview with someone or you're having a conversation, and frequently they're not always structured interviews, I think when someone's asking more about like, okay, well, what's the business trying to achieve? Like, what's the culture you have within the team or in the organization? Like, what do you look at? Like, what am I going to be dealing with if I'm reporting to someone, or if I'm managing a team, what is it like, what's expected of me? Those kind of questions are really good indicators, because it's someone who cares about what they're doing.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's it. Like, the key to hiring, in my estimation, and what do I know, is you want people who are going to be bought in. You know, and I'll share a quick anecdote to give an example of this. Not that this is a healthy thing, but you know, I had worked on in my industry, you work on some pretty like long-term projects. So things aren't like, you know, you do something in a week and it's done. You might have a 6-month long project or a year long project. And if you look into the history of this, like 97% of these projects tend to fail. And I didn't make that stat up. That's not me saying that, for the record. There's a book called How Big Things Happen that talks about this. Someone actually did this analysis. So someone much smarter than me, look that up. You know, example, Olympic Stadium, has it ever worked? I said it. So that being said, it's hard to sustain that. It takes time, and people lose motivation over that period of time, and you're dealing with change management. So people, you're changing the behavior or process or something, either for your audience, for your customers, or for your team internally, or teams internally who have different disciplines. That's really hard. People don't like change very much. As human beings, we're good at adapting to it, but we're very resistant at first, you know? So all that being said, I had an experience recently, you know, where it was a year-long project. Some people might argue it was a couple years long. It was this huge thing the company was trying to do. First team to actually get it done after a couple different failures, stop starts. And one of the things that really like made me somewhat emotional about it, which is weird saying emotional about working for someone else, shows you how much I'm bought in and how much my team is bought in. But because we had time zone differences between teams, we had people like in Europe and, you know, different parts of like Australia and so on. And so given that, you know, and we're in North America, it's kind of hard to coordinate across all these hours. And you're gonna have people coming online at a certain different time, and people are gonna be at like 4 a.m. You're like, oh, how does this work, right? So suffice to say, not easy to coordinate, and you got all these different disciplines working, so a lot of moving parts. But what was really struck me was the fact that when we had to come together to get things done, everyone got together. And not something I would encourage to any business, because people are going to argue work-life balance and all those things. But the people cared so much because they'd been working with this, and there was a certain amount of, like, I'd say, accountability to each other, that we got on a Zoom and we spent almost like 2 full days, like, just concurrently. People have families, you know, I'm a bachelor and so on, so I don't have that sort of responsibility, right? But they did. And they were so committed to the mission of getting this done as a group, and so accountable to each other because they didn't want anyone else done, that we all came together over a weekend to get this done, which is wild and shocking and not something you hear all the time, you know, unless there's like some sort of carrot on a stick for people to get. I definitely rewarded these people, of course, but I didn't promise them anything to get them to do it. They just did it out of their own volition. And so that, if you loop back to why you asked this question, what we're talking about here, that's the kind of motivation you're looking for, is people who just care, you know, be crass and say, people who give a shit.
Yeah. Yeah. How much do you work every week?
Because you just described like an insane amount of work. Because
my sister lives in Australia.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I know it's a 12-hour, 13-hour time difference, so,
yeah,
depending on the time.
Absolutely.
So I know that if they're waking up, if they're doing a 9-to-5, that means you're doing a 9-to-5 the other way. Like, what is happening here? How many hours are you putting in on a weekly basis?
I mean, if can give you the quantified answer, which is a lot, but
well, yeah, you're in data analytics. Tell me the exact number averaged out over the last 365 days.
I may have tracked this. No, in all seriousness, look, I work a lot, but I work because I want to. It's a responsibility I have, and I take leadership very seriously. I have a lot of people who rely on me, and,
right?
You know, I wouldn't be doing my job, and I wouldn't be able to ask them to do theirs,
right,
if I wasn't willing to do it myself.
Yep.
So you have to hold yourself accountable first. You have to set a standard, but not make it so like cumbersome on them where they feel like they can't match your standards, because that will, you know, you might lose people there. So that's my answer. I'm not trying to dodge you, but yeah, look, it depends on the week, obviously, but I work a lot. Yeah, for sure.
So, okay, let me ask it a different way that you can just give me a flat answer. Is it more than 50 hours a week?
Yeah, probably.
Is it more than 60?
Yeah, I'd say on average, yeah.
So the reason I'm asking this is because I think a lot of people, and the viewers and as well, they might think, well, you know, I think I'm safer if I stay working in a 9-to-5 capacity, working for somebody else, because, you know, I can finish at 5, I can start at 9, all that kind of stuff. That's for not winners. I mean, and I'm just going to say that. That's the mean thing to say. I don't give a shit. That's not for winners. Winners are the people that, like you, who in my estimation have won the rat race, corporate ladder, whatever you want to call it, because they are working more. And to a certain degree, you're always compensated for how much time you're willing to spend and how much effort and how much you care. Because the hours are, in my estimation, an estimation of how much you care.
Yeah, it's an interesting one to unpack, because, you know, you don't want to encourage anyone to break their work-life balance or not have that, and say that, you know, you have to work more hours to get the same outcome. Because, you know, if I'm talking about technology, automation,
right,
artificial intelligence, I mean, the whole goal is to get, you know, economies of scale.
Right.
So like, you shouldn't have to work more hours. It's like throwing more bodies at the problem, right? So that doesn't really make sense if you think of it that way.
Well, somebody's got to implement these things.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. Like, I think in the example, if you're remunerated based on compensation or variable compensation, yes, obviously there's basically, you know, a one-to-one relationship.
Right.
You probably should put in the hours.
Right.
I just care. So yeah, I do that. Now, is there an argument that someone else in an executional role could get their work done in 40 hours or less and, you know, get the same results and so on? Maybe. I think,
well, for sure, the argument there is clear, but what is not clear is the idea that they might get the same stuff done, but because they're not going the extra mile and showing the initiative and showing that they're willing to take on maybe a little bit more or take on a couple of extra projects or what have you, they're not going to have the same trajectory in terms of their career's progression.
Yeah. I was like
to me, I mean, what the hell do I know? I've been an entrepreneur like 90% of my life.
Well, I think you're doing very well. You know, that being said, it depends what you want, right? And I think that's the first thing. I mean, I can go into philosophy of that, because I think that's probably the most important thing to give to anyone thinking about whether they want to work in a 9-to-5, quote unquote, because, you know, the term 9-to-5 is hilarious. I definitely don't work 9-to-5.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever done that. But it's more of, what are you trying to get at? Again, if you're a leader and if you want, you know, not just to have a title and not just because you think there's more compensation that goes with it, you genuinely want to help people, lead people, help them grow and develop people because that's your responsibility, then it seems probably somewhat dishonest in a way to say like, okay, cool, I'm going to like clock out And like, if you need me, like that's a tomorrow thing. And that's it. You know, this is my beliefs. I'm not putting, I would never like say that to anyone else to say that you need to do this or use the imperative that way. It's just for me, right? I believe, and I ask people to buy into something. I'm like, look, here's what we're doing. There's a lot here. It's pretty intense. Okay, cool. I'm willing to do anything to make this work. And I have your back on whatever it is. So if I'm willing to do that, and I'll show you, you know, like I get messages like 8, 10 PM, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's not healthy, but I mean, it is what it is, right? That's my responsibility. And I've
so funny. He's like, that's not healthy. Meanwhile, that's like every day for us. Yeah. Like every day.
Well, there you go.
It's like if you went out to the office here and talked to agents to say like, oh, it's really unhealthy that I got messages at 10 PM. They'd be like, bro, I got clients messaging me at 1 a.m. sometimes.
Yeah. Fair call.
Listen, you set the standard, right? Like you said.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just think it's responsibility. Like you gotta know what are you willing to do? If you really, I mean, my belief is, and again, I don't come from a family that like had a lot. So for me, it's kind of, you know, put into me where it's like, look, if you want something, you got to want it really badly and you got to be willing to do what it takes. And if that means, you know, hey, like on a Thursday at 8 p.m., you got to answer stuff and, you know, it's like a certain type of year or whatever it is, and you're not getting like hourly wages for that because, again, it's different and maybe you're in your industry. Mm-hmm. Well, too bad. Do it. Do you want to do it or not? Like, do you want it or not? If you want it, you do it. And you don't always get a reward directly for it. It doesn't mean you're going to put the hours in and then you get it. What I always tell people and what my mentors have always taught me, and it's a lesson that I've passed on afterwards, which can be challenging to understand. And trust me, I've gone through it myself where I was like, wow, this, wah, right? Is you do the job, then you get the job and not the other way around.
Yeah.
You know, life isn't fair like that. Now, it might happen to you. You never know. But in general, you should be willing to do the work and then you'll get the rewards for it. And don't look at the other way around.
That's the clip. That's the clip.
That is the clip.
That was awesome.
You do the job and then you get the job.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Random fun thing, because it's just like a trope I've heard so many times, but like dress for the job that you want. You believe any of that shit?
I mean, like you're asking me about style.
Obviously, people are not supposed to show up looking like a bum, but you know, how much does that matter in a corporate environment?
I mean, like teach their own, and it depends on your role and what you're looking to do. So I'm far be it for me to critique anyone's fashion sense. Now, I happen to have a certain style affectation, which you're all familiar with. Well, people here are familiar with.
Right.
So I tend to care about that. It's something passionate.
But it usually involves a blazer, which is very classically, you know, gentlemanly.
That's why we all wear blazers today.
Well, I appreciate y'all. Most certainly appreciate y'all.
Like, if you're listening to this, we're all wearing blazers.
in general, like the kind of tech industry, you know, you tend to have a kind of uniform in a sense where people joke about, which is either you're going to have the Zuckerberg kind of stereotype where you have like a hoodie, flip-flop shorts, maybe not in Montreal in this weather. And then, you know, if you're more in a leadership role, you'll be doing like blazer, t-shirt, and jeans.
Patagonia vest.
Yeah, Patagucci. Do you guys do
Patagucci, though.
You know? So I certainly dress that way. I like to wear suits and things. It's not necessary. And I'm probably one of the only people that would do that.
Really?
Unless it's like an earnings call or something. Yeah, our C levels and stuff are far more casual, like a sweater, jeans.
Very interesting.
The tech industry is more like that. It's not, you know, it's not old school. And I imagine if you work in something that's more traditional, like
finance.
Yep. Something of that nature. You know, you might be wearing a suit and tie every day, but in my industry, no, like there's no ties. And if it's a suit, it's usually with like a tee as opposed mm-hmm. to a dress shirt. But all that to say, the spirit of the question here is basically saying, you know, does a law of attraction exist? I don't know. But I certainly believe that I feel better when I dress a certain way, and I like wearing certain outfits because it makes me feel a certain way. And that's why I just do it. And I certainly believe that helps perpetuate my success and how I behave. Cause I know, like, you know, think about it. You leave the house, you know, maybe your hair is not coiffed a certain way. You didn't sleep a lot, you know, kind of had a rough day. You're not caffeinated. You know, you're wearing, I don't know, whatever you'd wear, sweatpants instead of, you know, a pair of jeans or something, or a pair of slacks. You know, do you feel great about yourself? Look, if someone else does, great. That's your preference. For me, it isn't that way. I feel best when I rock a suit, even just a t-shirt and some sneakers.
Totally agree.
I feel really good. Might listen to some R&B and just, you know, rock with it. And I can get over a lot of things that way. It pulls me through a lot of tough times when it's like I'm on low sleep.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. One of the first coaches I ever had, the first thing that he told me to do, I was like 20 years old at the time. He said, first thing you do in the morning, you know, shower, shave, put a suit on. Uh-huh. You know, I was living at my parents' place. I was making cold calls from the basement. Put a suit on. I'm like, are you serious? Like, dude, I live here. I'm 20 years old. Like, I'm not going to be buying my first house for a couple of years now. He says, doesn't matter. Put a suit on. Go downstairs. And I did. And it's like, you make calls differently. You address clients differently. you do different things when you're dressed a certain kind of way that makes you feel good. I agree. I don't think it's necessarily needs to be a suit and tie type of thing, but I think dressing to give yourself energy is an important thing. Maybe it's a law of attraction thing. I don't know.
In theater, they have dress rehearsals. They have like the whole,
That's hilarious. I didn't even think of that.
Oh yeah, man. We used to do that all the time in theater. Yeah. It was like you get the outfit, you'd get the thing, and it would just make you feel more connected to the role. And it's the, you know, we do have that outward facing, you know, role that we have to play. It is part of our who we are. So our outfit, our uniform is a part of who we are and how we present. So I 100% agree.
I know for a fact that when Yamin answers his phone at work, he has a different voice than when he answers his phone at home. So I know there's a little bit of a Salt Bay of acting going on a regular basis. I mean,
it's not performative in any way. But
no, of course not. It's natural. You know, you want to, it's just like I haven't said the F word at all in this entire podcast. Meanwhile, if you got me off this podcast, it would likely be one in every 30 or 40 of my words.
You're a very eloquent person in
general.
Hey,
thank you, my friend.
Just imagining the contrast of Yamin pulling up. It's like Mean Girls. Get in, we're going shopping.
Very much that way. There's etiquette that happens. And so obviously, you know, you're going to behave a certain way and speak a certain way. I'm not like doing the corporate thing. And I'm sure there's a lot of memes about that. On the suit thing, I'll just say quickly, you know, people say that it's like a common piece of advice, like put on a suit and make calls or whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. And people take that like, oh, literally they just go and buy a suit and do that. And then they're like, oh, this is a meme. I'm sure it's going to change anything. I think it's like, look, dress in a way that makes you feel confident when you're in, you know, whatever you're doing, whether you're at an office, whether you're at home. You know, there's a whole casualification, I don't know if that's the right English there, but yeah, of the wardrobe in general that's happening across the world. And it's something you see primarily in North America. I'm not a big fan of it, but I'm also not going to judge anyone else for their choices on that. I just think that the life I want to live and what works for me and a lot of my friend group is, you know, just put a little effort in, you know, just like iron your t-shirt, you know, don't have like a
at least steam
shirt.
It.
Yeah, it's definitely steamed. I use the iron on the suit and steam the t-shirt.
My dryer has a steam function. So
listen, this is a lot of technology. And, you know, speaking of that,
Lindsay does the laundry, though. We're very traditional. So.
I will not make any comments on that.
Your part, John, for Christ's sake.
I do the dishes.
Oh, well, there you go.
We have a really good dishwasher.
Everyone, all the responsibilities should be shared. And let's move on
that
from
much
that.
I agree.
So you got a big team now. Mm. Yeah. I mean, so what do you do to keep them motivated? Because you said, like, they've got a set salary, most of them, I imagine. They're not hourly.
No.
So a lot of them are on set salaries, and there's going to be times where you will expect them to kind of bend that work-life balance to, like, for instance, this large project that you described before. There was probably some bending that you were asking them to do. How did you said it was great. It was a beautiful moment. They all came together and it was awesome, but they must have had something going on there where they were motivated in some way, and it can't just be about the money. So what are you doing to keep them hype, keep them on track?
Well, so ideally it starts with how you hire and the kind of character you have, right? Characters you bring around you. Then it's also the culture you have both in the company and your team and how you maintain that. So like that ideally should just be organic. You shouldn't have to force any of that and ask people to do things if you need be. But beyond that, you know, I said earlier, I don't think there's anything earth shattering here. It's just you lead by example. So if I'm asking someone to do something, I would do that as well.
Nice. Right?
I'm not going to ask someone to do something I wouldn't do. No matter like what it is, I'm not kidding. I've done like even now people be like, oh, people try to treat me differently or something. I'm like, no, I'll go press buttons. It's not like a thing where I'm just, you know, a figurehead and just speaking and just giving instructions or something. That's not how you should, I don't think it's a way to live anyway. So yeah, it's the culture you build, foment.
And you said you'll go press buttons, but how do you, like make it okay that you're going to press buttons when you're managing 140 other people who could be pressing those buttons?
It's probably not the right thing to me. I should probably find a better balance of doing that. But you know,
I guess you need people to see you doing your work too.
I hope I have a good relationship with my team and a good amount of respect from them. And from what I can tell, yes. And I have really good, you know, retention. Don't have a lot of turnover normally. But that being said, I'm not always that strategic about it, but I think it's good sometimes for them just to see, have your presence in there. Like, you know, the worst thing you can have is you have someone who's like an executive or leader and they're not present in conversations, not present in meetings, and just delegating and not involved. Like I said, it's just leading by example at the end of the day. It's not that complicated to me.
Awesome. Last thing that I want to talk to you about is, you know, for the listeners that do decide after hearing this, you know what, I am going to stop slacking off at my job. I'm going to start taking it seriously. I'm going to try and scale. I'm going to try and grow within my organization, maybe bounce to a couple other ones, whatever it is, what would you say to somebody that has that mindset, that's ready to kind of take it to the next level and win this game?
Yeah, I'm happy to give practical advice here. I feel like I've been talking about myself and other things, and it's been somewhat abstract. So first things
first. You'd be surprised, man. People are going to glean a lot from this.
Mm-hmm. One can only hope. So like, practical advice is this. There's basically, if you look at I'd like to give people frameworks. That way you can kind of imagine it, visualize it your own way. Essentially, you can either go more in depth in your field. So you pick a field, something you care about, something you're good at, and something that has value. This is not me inventing any of this. From there, you can go very deep in your field. So you can be a specialist. Right. And again, there's individual contributors and there are leaders, people leaders, right? You can be a leader as an individual contributor as well. Then there's breadth, which means that essentially, like I did, you know, what worked for me was, hey, I had a certain responsibility. The business developed other needs that were adjacent to what I did. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm willing to take that on and I'm not asking for more money for it at first. Mm-hmm. Okay. Don't become like the DiCaprio meme of like, I get to do everyone else's job and so on. But, you know, I took that on. Again, you do the job, then you get the job. So I did it. I took on more and I had more breadth. And from there, I was able to grow from there. So
I'll also just add that you didn't forget to ask for the job.
Of course.
There's a lot of missteps where they'll do the job, but then they don't ask for the job. And of course, honestly, put yourself in your employer's shoes. Why would they promote you? Why would they pay you more when you're already doing it? You have to do it and then ask.
Yeah, most certainly. Look, I think the next thing I was going to say, which is perfectly timed with what you just said there, is you want to have a relationship in some form with your leaders, with the people around you.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, like we all are at the end of the day, they're a product of people who've invested in us, whether it's our parents or whether it's leaders we've had, you know, and or friends or whatever it may be, right? Or, you know, other people's parents. For me, I was very lucky that, you know, obviously I had really great parents, my mom, my grandma, who gave me, like, inspired me and gave me a lot of good direction there. But early on in my career, I had, you know, a VP there took me under her wing. And then afterwards, and every company I ended up with, I always had someone who was willing to kind of like, hey, take me, you know, under and give me some guidance and some advice about how to do things. And so I'm really a product of obviously the work I've done on myself and tried to self-actualize there, but also the guidance they've given me. So that's a long-winded way of saying, you know, yes, do the work, do the job, etc. Put that all in, lead by example. Ideally, this needs to be visible. Tree falls in the woods,
mm-hmm. yep.
right? And don't assume that everyone has that comprehension. If at the beginning of this conversation, what we talked about was being able to articulate what you do, what I might do, which is very different from your field. But, you know, y'all more or less understand, you know, what I'm saying, I hope, you know, if I've done a good job about that. And so that's a skill in and of itself. And so when you're dealing with certain type of leaders, don't assume that the way you communicate is the way that they understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are responsible and you are accountable for communicating the impact you're having, what you're delivering in a way, but without pressuring them and without like trying to oversell them. Right? But at the end of the day, that's what communication is. It's just getting people to understand. And that's why we get into conflict and why people get frustrated, is because they feel misunderstood, like children. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not saying people are like children all the time. Sometimes we can be. But that's the idea. It's all about trying to understand each other. That's all we're trying to do in this world. And that's all we're trying to do in our, you know, day-to-day lives, whatever business we're in.
And there's also kind of knowing your value as well, because as you were saying, you do, you know, do the job, get the job. But to Logan's point, you won't just get the job sure. unless you ask for it. So at a certain point, you've done the job enough that you know, okay, now it's time for me to get the job. And I've got to ask for that.
Yeah, I think it's a great point you bring up. Like, I won't lie to you, you've been party to some of this separately. You know, I've had many conversations to get through things in my career. And
nobody just handed you your jobs,
it'd
be right?
Really nice if it had worked out that way. No, but there's like, I think people, what I've been told recently from colleagues of mine or partners of mine is that, hey, you know what? You're a very motivated person. You know, you're very hungry. It's very clear. You know, you have ambition, et cetera. And so, but I always took it as my responsibility to articulate to my leaders, you know, saying like who I reported to, saying, hey, look, here's what I'm doing. Here's the situation. Here's where I see this going. Here's the opportunity I see. Does this make sense to you? And always taking that step myself, not relying on anyone else to come to me and just hand me something. I just, you know, choose to live your life in your own way. And it's not easy to have those conversations. It requires a bit of confidence. And I have a decent amount of that, I think, at least I've been told. But at the end of the day, you're accountable to yourself. And then if you're leading a team, you're accountable to them. So if you're not willing to have that conversation, why should you be the person running things? You know,
well
how
said.
How can you ask anyone to follow you?
Well yeah. said. Thanks so much for joining us today, Yamin. And thanks so much for everybody for listening today. It was an awesome conversation. We're definitely going to have you back, because I feel like we barely scratched the surface there on everything that we should be talking about. So thanks so much. And thanks for listening to another episode of Montreal's Elite Unleashed, the podcast for hustlers looking to level up their lives.